Phillies eliminated last night, but the Dodgers survive. We'll break it all down on this episode of First Pitch. Yes, welcome on into First Pitch for Thursday, October 10th. Your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock. You can follow him on Twitter at Troy B Baseball. Our guy Christian's hoping to get back tomorrow. He's been dealing with some illness. Doesn't have much of a voice right now. So big thanks to Troy for stepping into the net for the last few days. And I'm actually glad you're here, Troy, because you are a noted Phillies fan. You've covered the team, host of the Philly Faithful podcast, not with an F, but a PH. And so I want to get your perspective here. The New York Mets take down the Phillies 3-1 last night, eliminating Philadelphia in the NLDS. This is now the third consecutive October that Philly has made the postseason and been eliminated short of their goal. Obviously, they lost the World Series to the Astros in 2022. They lose the NLCS to the Diamondbacks in 2023. And now, in what looked to be the best version of their roster that they've had of the 3 years, they lose in the divisional series to a rival in the New York Mets. And it really, this sounds bad to say it like this, it didn't feel like it was as close as the 4-1 score might make it indicate. Phillies take a lead in the fourth inning. They're up 1-0, but you get to the sixth, and it's just, I'm not going to say a disaster, but it's just, it is not very good, right? I mean, this is a situation. Starling Marte gets hit by a pitch. Tyrone Taylor walks. It's a lot of action on the base paths. JD Martinez singled to open the inning. He gets thrown out at home, and you're like, okay, maybe we can get out of this. Carlos Estevez comes in for Jeff Hoffman, gives up a grand slam to Francisco Lindor. That's all she wrote. The 4-1 margin stands, and the Phillies are eliminated. Is this, I guess I want to get to this game first before we look at the bigger picture. What happened in this, or I guess what went wrong in this game? Robert Suarez had given you 4 1/3 innings, 5 hits, no runs, 4 walks to 8 strikeouts. You go to the bullpen, it didn't work out. What happened here?
Well, as far as the bullpen goes, Jeff Hoffman came in the fifth, got out of the fifth very well, did a very good job, had that adrenaline dump in the fifth on 7 pitches to get out of the inning. And then in the top of the sixth, the Phillies offense got a couple of hits, and the Mets also made 2 pitching changes in that inning because there was a good, decent amount of plate appearances for the Phillies in that inning. So Jeff Hoffman sat for at least 20 minutes. And then it was essentially the same thing you and I talked about, I think, yesterday, where Thompson stuck with Jeff Hoffman to go back out in the sixth inning after the adrenaline dump in the fifth, and then sitting for 20-plus minutes in the top of the sixth. Hoffman comes back out to start the bottom of the sixth, and he did not have it at all. As you said, the single opened the inning from JD Martinez. And then after that, it was a wild pitch, advanced Martinez to second. And then he hit Marte. And then another wild pitch, advanced both runners to second and third. And then he walked Tyrone Taylor to load the bases. I think Hoffman may have gotten one out in the sixth before Estevez came in.
Yeah, he got the It was a grounder from Alvarez to short, and Trey Turner came home with it to stop the run versus going to first. And he got JD Martinez at home because JD Martinez runs about as well as as cold molasses.
Right.
Yeah.
And then Francisco Lindor's due up with the bases loaded, and Rob Thompson goes to Carlos Estevez, who gave up an RBI double to Francisco Lindor the night before. And Francisco Lindor hits the grand slam, which was the total scoring for the Mets in that ballgame. But it's just some bad managerial moves, yes. And then the bottom of the lineup, really, the approach was better last night than it was in game three. They definitely, they were more patient. They saw a lot more pitches, but they just, when the pitches they did swing at last night, they just really didn't put in play all that well.
Yeah, it felt like, I'm not going to say it's all on Rob Thompson because he's not throwing these pitches. He's not calling these pitches and all of that. But the choice to, one, stick with Hoffman in the second inning, like you said, after two pitching changes, 20-something minutes, whatever. And then, two, to go to Estevez over somebody like Ryan Kirkering, to me, felt like that was the big issue. And I understand with Kirkering, you always, because one of his primary weapons is that sweeper, you always have concerns about the platoon, the platoon opportunities there. If you are there's handedness issues and things like that. But it feels like, given that Estevez had given up the double to Lindor the day before, you can't pitch around him at that point. Bases are loaded. But it feels like you have a better chance if you can go to a guy like Kirkering, who can take the ball out of the zone, who can have a pitch that looks like a strike and ends up a ball. That's more reliable than going to somebody like Estevez, who is going to attack him in the zone. And, you know, we saw the home run. Like, he threw a 100-mile-an-hour ball well outside of the zone. He threw a 99.8-mile-an-hour one up, but he threw two both middle away. And Lindor swung through the first one. He did not miss the second one. And it felt like, kind of like you said, like that was the game. And really, it's just, Thompson has not handled these situations well. It felt like, I personally don't think that managers have a lot of influence in the game as far as the overall course of the game. This is perhaps the one area where I think that managers can really impact the game, is what pitcher they go to win, and then if they stick with that guy versus going to somebody else. And I kind of think, if I have to blame anybody, yes, the bottom of the lineup didn't do anything last night. Outside of Nick Castellanos, you had a grand total of one hit from the bottom five in the lineup. But that definitely didn't help, because that feels like it was an avoidable grand slam if you make some different pitching decisions going into that inning and then during that inning when you have a mess.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And Carlos Estevez, ever since the Phillies traded for him, he has not been good in high leverage situations at all. He came over to be the closer, and he has six saves with the team, but in high leverage situations, he has just proven time and time again that he is just not the answer. And I think I saw a stat that he has given up, including the postseason, he's given up 14 earned runs in like 23 or 24 innings with the Phillies since coming over. And that's
wild.
That's not good, especially for somebody that's supposed to be a closer.
That's not good. No. Going to a little bit of a bigger picture now that Philly's gone, and I know people want to hear about the Mets. We'll talk about the Mets tomorrow. Bigger picture on Philly here. I want to talk about Bryce Harper for a minute, because he's in a really interesting situation of, he leaves Washington to come to Philly, and Washington wins the World Series without him, right? He comes over here, and they make the World Series in 2022. He's the MVP of the championship series win over the Padres. People forget that. He went 8-20 with two homers, three doubles, and five RBI in that series. Struck out once in five games. But they lose the World Series in 22. 23, they lose the NLCS to Arizona. And now in 24, with what I would argue is their best team they've had of those 3 years, they lose in the divisional series to the Mets. Is Bryce Harper, does it feel like he's one of those guys that needs to win a World Series in his career to be solidly in that pantheon of best players in this generation? Or simply because of what he's been able to do, a two-time MVP, a three-time Silver Slugger, eight-time All-Star, Rookie of the Year, Home Run Derby champ, and all that, is he going to be able to have that title, one of the best players of this generation, despite not winning a World Series?
I could be a little biased, but I think he does still have the title, one of the best players of this generation, but a World Series definitely would not hurt. And if you look at it, it's really not Bryce Harper that's the issue in the postseason. I mean, in his career, in his career, he's got a 1.016 OPS in the postseason. And this season, he has a 1.279 postseason with a 529 on base percentage. So he has performed time and time again in the postseason. And yeah, just the team around him really has not, for the most part.
Yeah, he bats .333 in this four-game series, hits a home run, two doubles. So of his four hits, three are for extra bases, three runs, three RBI, five walks to five strikeouts. Just like in the NLCS last year, six walks to six strikeouts. The last time he struck out more than he walked in a postseason was 2022, right? That's the last time that that happened. He struck out 14 times and he walked only six. And if it's not necessarily his fault, and again, I mentioned earlier, the bottom five of that lineup combined for one hit last night. Is it conceivable that the Dave Dombrowski roster building strategy here of getting star players on huge deals, that is somehow contributing to the caliber of the roster around him? Because you look right now, going into next year, you have eight players making $18 or more million, including seven players making more than 20. Like, you have Schwarber and Castellanos both inked for $20 million. Real Muto's making almost 24. Nola's making almost 25. Harper and Turner are both in the 27s. Wheeler's making 42. And so because of that, you end up filling out your roster with a lot of pre-arb, minimum salary guys. Bryson Stott's making $768,000. Brandon Marsh, $768,000. Johan Rojas, $745,000. Is the Harper contract one of the issues preventing Philly from building a better roster around him and the other stars? Or is that just, that's how modern baseball works and you've got to find a way to get around it?
The contract definitely doesn't help, and especially the contracts to some of the other guys, like you said, Taiwan Walker making $18 million from before the ink was dry on that deal. That was not a good deal. Castellanos making $20 million. I mean, he's been good, but he's really not $20 million. JT Realmuto, a 34-year-old catcher, making $24 million. He's still defensively, he's still one of the best in the game, but offensively, he has definitely taken a step back.
He did not look to be healthy. I know that he had a knee procedure, but he looks like he's hit the wall as far as playtime. He's been ridden too hard the last couple seasons, and next year probably needs to be one of the first years of his career where he doesn't start more than maybe two or three consecutive games before getting a day off. Unlike he'd play five or six consecutive games and get a day off. It feels like we've got to fix that coming up. He's just hit that point where he can't do it anymore.
Oh yeah. And it's not a thing where you can move him to first, because that's where Bryce Harper is now.
Yeah.
and so you're stuck with him as your catcher. And I agree with you. He needs to get more days off. But then Trey Turner, $27 million. He hasn't lived up to that in the 2 years that he's been with Philly. And another issue has been, outside of a few cases here and there in the past 20 years, the team hasn't been able to develop those players that can produce on those league minimum deals and pre-arbitration numbers. Like Brandon Marsh, the Phillies traded for Brandon Marsh, and he's been serviceable. He's definitely been one of the better ones.
You're getting your money's worth, right?
Right.
Of him being paid less than $1 million, but you need more than that when Bryce Harper's no longer in your right fielder.
Right, absolutely. And Johan Rojas offensively is essentially an automatic out every time he comes to the plate. And yes, he's one of the best defensive center fielders that in the game, but does that really make up for the lack of production at the plate? And it's just, and then the trade deadline with Dombrowski so far, the past two seasons, it's just been a bust as a whole. Austin Hayes did not work out. Carlos Estevez, that we talked about, did not work out. Tanner Banks, I mean, he's a long innings guy. I mean, you're going to get what you're going to get from Tanner Banks. There's not really a boom or bust on that one. It's just from the top down, it's just they need to take a step back and look at things as a whole and just reevaluate how they formulate the team going forward.
Yeah. For more coverage on the Phillies as they start their postseason, the Philly Faithful Pod with a PH, wherever you get your podcast and on YouTube, Troy's going to have you guys covered multiple times a week, breaking down what this team does in the offseason. From a team that was eliminated to a team that lived to fight another day, Los Angeles Dodgers evened up their series with the Padres on a strength of an 8-0 victory. Little bit of gamesmanship here. They announced Freddie Freeman as a starter in the lineup, made that adjustment after the game or at the last minute that they could before the game to take him back out. We found out after the game that he had breakfast with Dave Roberts on yesterday morning, and they knew then he was not going to play in the game. But unlike for Philly, the bottom part of the lineup actually comes in there and picks him up. 5 through 9, four of those players combined for 6 hits. Will Smith finally gets off the postseason skid. He goes 1 for 5, 2 RBI, 2 runs scored. Tommy Edman, 1 for 4, starts at shortstop in place of Miguel Rojas. Gavin Lux goes 2 for 4 with 2 RBI and 2 runs. Kike Hernandez, 2 for 4 with a run. And the Padres did a little bit of a risk here. We've talked before about them, how they deployed Dylan Cease, right? Holding Dylan Cease out of the Atlanta series to have him for this series. They throw him on short rest, first time in his career, 1 2/3 innings, 4 runs, 3 hits. He comes out in the second inning with only 2 outs. From that point on, Brian Hoeing gives up 2 more runs. And then it's an easy 8-0 victory. You kind of hold no home runs for the Padres. You hold Tatis to a double. You hold Cronenworth to a triple. Only extra base hits there. And really, in this bullpen game, Padres go 0-for-9 with runners in scoring position and strand 9 batters, while the Dodgers go 5-for-9 with runners in scoring position. Now that you're heading back to LA for Game 5, how do you feel about this series? And are we still both pretty consistent with our belief that the Padres ultimately advance, or do the Dodgers have the ability to take that final game and move on to the championship series?
I've gotten a little more iffy on it, but I do still think the Padres can advance just based on depth and their lack of injuries compared to the Dodgers' lack of injuries. Mm-hmm. But it's starting to look like Dylan Cease ain't it. I know that was the first time he's gone on short rest, but I was just looking at his monthly splits, and he's just been very inconsistent throughout the season. He had that no hitter, but mm-hmm. He had a 2.61 ERA in April, a 4.08 ERA in May, a 4.94 ERA in June, back to 2.35 in July, 4.43 in August, and then 2.97 in September. It's just outside of the one season with Chicago where he had that 2.2 ERA, he's really not – I mean, that's probably a flash in the pan. You may not ever see that again from Dylan Cease, just looking at his consistency.
Yeah, he hasn't really lived up to the reputation I think he's been given because of the no-hitter and things like that. And obviously, with no Joe Musgrove next year, it's going to be a big thing for the Padres to get that version of Dylan Cease back, the consistent wire-to-wire top-tier pitcher in baseball back. The good news is, because of their better depth than the Dodgers, they've already been able to announce Yu Darvish as the starter for Friday. Still a TBD for the Dodgers. We don't know if that's going to be Yamamoto or Flaherty. We've seen things that are a little bit concerning from both guys, so we'll see what happens. But either way, this is still a series, and I think I'm a little bit surprised that this is still a series. I fully expected the Dodgers to be done after last night, but they were able to. Mookie Betts goes 2 for 5. Hits a home run, second of the postseason. Will Smith pops one. Gavin Lux pops one. Shohei Ohtani goes 1 for 3. It's a single, but still, Ohtani's out there a little bit. He did drive in an RBI with 2 outs, and I think that's one of the big things that they really did well. They got 4 RBI with 2 outs last night, something that it felt like that was, at the same time, I think it was 6 runners were left in scoring position with 2 outs by the Padres. They just weren't able to finish the drill. No. So you have to hope that going back to LA, the Padres can make it happen. We'll have more about that game on Friday. That is the only game on Friday because the National League is now alternating with the American League. Last night was the last night of the year with four baseball games. And so in the American League matchups, we did see what I thought were two really good games. First game was Cleveland at Detroit. Yankees at Kansas City was in the evening. Let's go Cleveland-Detroit first. 3-0 Detroit in this one. I don't quite think I expected the Guardians to be held to 6 hits in this matchup. 3 of them from Steven Kwan. You know, outside of that, Jose Ramirez goes 0-for-3, doesn't strike out, does walk once. But Josh Naylor gets 1 hit. Lane Thomas gets 1 hit. Brian Rocchio goes 1-for-2 at the bottom of the order. And that's it offensively for Cleveland. And I think the big credit for the win here goes to the Tigers bullpen. As always, the pitching chaos, right? They use Keiter Montero to start the game. He goes 1 inning. Brant Herder throws 3 1/3. Bobrisky goes 2 innings, and then it's a bunch of partial stuff here. But they hold Cleveland to 0-for-8 with runners in scoring position. Do we think that the Tigers can finish this tonight, or is this something where, since Cleveland gets Tanner Bibby back on the mound, they can tie it back up and force a game 5?
Yeah, I think which I said this yesterday and I was proven wrong yesterday, but I think the Guardians are going to take tonight's game. But just with Tanner Bibby helps tremendously for the Guardians. And the Guardians did out hit the Tigers in yesterday's game, and they had the same amount of base runners. The Guardians just weren't able, like you said, to hit with runners in scoring position. And that proved very costly for them. And it's just, I still think the Guardians are going to tie it up. This one will probably be another 2-2 going to game 5 in Cleveland.
Yeah. And the big thing that the big thing that stood out to me, and I understand you're in the bullpen after the first inning, right? This is a bullpen game for Detroit, like they've done so many times down the stretch. But how aggressive Stephen Vogt, manager of the Guardians, was with making substitutions, pinch hits, and things like that early in the game. He sends Jawinski Noel in to pinch hit for Brennan in the second inning. He flies out. He ends up going 0-for-4. Brennan never had a plate appearance in this game.
Yep.
Kyle Manzardo, who was one of their best hitters in the month of September, he goes 0-for-1. He gets pinch hit by David Fry. Fry strikes out, ends up going 0-3. Fry hasn't been great since the All-Star break. He strikes out twice of his 3 at-bats in this one. And then they replace Bo Naylor. Martinez gets a pinch hit appearance in the 7th. He grounds out. Austin Hedges comes in, finishes up the game. And it feels like it's almost a little bit too... It's almost a little bit over-managing here. I think another situation, kind of like the pitching changes, where you can't really do a lot to help your team here, but you can definitely hurt your team. And if you're confident enough in what Kyle Manzardo can do to bat him 2nd in his rookie year, he's not been up incredibly long, you can bat him 2nd in his rookie year just to pinch hit for him in the 3rd inning. It feels like maybe you're over-managing a little bit by Stephen Vogt. Is that fair, or is that based on the game situation? You know, you get to the 3rd, they're already down 1-0. They've got to try to manufacture some offense. Am I off base here or not?
No, I'm right there with you. I think it was a little bit of over-managing. At that early in the game, you gotta go with the guys that started the game. I get making pinch hits later in the game, and I would be on the other side of that if it was later in the game and things needed to happen. But 3rd inning is much, much too early for me, in my opinion, to be doing that many pinch hits. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah. I mean, it obviously didn't work out here. You know, we saw that. So now, again, you force another game on Cleveland-Detroit. Again, Tanner Bibby, 6:08 p.m. Eastern on TNT. We do not have a starter for Detroit. I don't know if Tarik Skubal is available or if he would be a game 5. You would have to hope that either way, Cleveland is dreading that Tarik Skubal game. You want to push that to a game 5. But either way, going to be an interesting matchup on Thursday night.
Yep.
I think the other one, and probably... maybe the most surprising outcome here was the Yankees winning 3-2 over Kansas City to push this into a game four here. Yankees score one in the fourth, one in the fifth. Royals tie it up, and then in the eighth is when the Yankees score that third and ultimately winning run. Only had four hits in this game. Three of them come from Giancarlo Stanton. He hits a double off of Seth Lugo. He steals second base. Just absolutely nuts. And then he turns around. He gets that home run off of Chris Bubic in the eighth inning. I think that we've had a lot of criticism of Giancarlo Stanton over the years because of the injuries, because of just the being so slow, the lack of performances and things like that. It's hard to, we have to remember that in the postseason, Giancarlo Stanton's a .266 batter with 12 home runs in 30 games. Now, granted, a lot of that was earlier in his career, but still just something where Giancarlo Stanton has been better, I would argue, in the postseason than he has been in the regular season, at least in recent years. He's batting .308 in this series, a double and a homer. Again, that stolen base, only the second stolen base in his postseason career. First one came in his first postseason game in 2018 against Oakland in a wild card matchup. Back up here. Getting three runs, but only on four hits, and three of them from Giancarlo Stanton. Is this a sign that the Yankees can make it happen no matter what? Or is this a sign that the Yankees are in trouble and probably got a little bit lucky in this one?
I think it could be a little bit of both. I think a lot of luck did play into that. I think Giancarlo Stanton heard our podcast from yesterday and said, I'm going to show that dude down in Alabama that I can steal some bases. But I think that it, especially if the Yankees advance past this round, I think that everybody's going to look back and point at that as the turning point. I think it could be a turning point for them going forward, and they're going to look at that as the Giancarlo Stanton game. Because he was just, he did everything. And I think that mostly because of his injury history, that the way that the postseason schedule is as spread out as it is, I think it works perfectly for a guy like Giancarlo Stanton to get him more rest. There's more off days during the week. You're not playing 6-7 days a week. You know, you're playing two games here and then a day off. Then you're playing one game and then a day off. And then you're playing two games or three games and a day off. And I think that's perfect for a guy like Giancarlo Stanton with his injury history. But going forward, I still like the Royals, man. I don't know what it is. I still like the Royals in this series. And Bobby Witt got a hit last night, so he showed up. He remembered he's playing baseball still. So
yeah, Bobby Witt goes 1-for-3 in this one, has a walk, has a strikeout, batting .182 so far. In this, Vinny Pascantino 0-for-3. He's batting .105. Aaron Judge goes 0-for-4 in this game, has a walk, has a strikeout, batting .091 with a .377 OPS. It feels like for Kansas City to win two consecutive games, they're going to have to get more out of that duo of Bobby Witt and Vinny Pascantino.
Oh yeah,
that is where they are. I mean, Salvador Perez has done everything he can. He was 1-for-4 in this game with a strikeout. Michael Massey hits a triple from the leadoff spot. He's batting .368. Like a lot of the guys who we didn't necessarily expect to carry a load. Mikel Garcia, he went 0-for-4 in this one, but he had four hits of the day. He's batting .316. Adam Frazier, 1-for-3, batting .333, scored a run, got pinch hit by Tommy Pham in the ninth, but he's been good enough where he's playing almost every day, and Tommy Pham is not. And that's a guy that we thought was going to power them to a win here. Yep. It's really just been, it feels like this is going to come down to which team can get their star going first. Juan Soto is doing Juan Soto things. He didn't have a hit in this one, but he walked twice. Two of nine walks for the Yankees, by the way. They walked nine times.
Yeah.
But, he's batting .300 with an .829 OPS. He's doing what he needs to do. But can Aaron Judge get going before Bobby Witt and Vinny Pascantino do it? It feels like that's going to decide the series. That being said, you are up. Yankees are up 2-1. Game four is tonight. Gerrit Cole versus Michael Wacha. The Royals have to win this to force a game five. Obviously, if they force a game five, it would be on Sunday back in New York. We don't have starting pitchers or anything like that. We'll see if the Royals can do it, but it's feeling a little bit like this might be the last gasp for the Kansas City Royals. That game's 8:08 p.m. on TBS. Just to kind of confirm your picks, you had Detroit and Kansas City tonight, right? Yes. I think I also have Detroit, but I think despite what I've been saying for a while, I think I'm going to go with the Yankees tonight. It's hard for me to bet against Gerrit Cole. I know the Royals' backs are against the wall. They have a tougher task, I would argue, having to get two guys going versus the Yankees having to get one. This feels like Aaron Judge is all is going to be forgiven in the Bronx if he can just hit one big home run in this game to put it away and put them in the ALCS, which would start on Monday. So I'm going to go, with the Tigers at, in the 6:08 game. I'm going to go with the Yankees in the 8 p.m. game, wrapping up this series and punching their ticket to the ALCS. Before we get out of here, any final thoughts, Troy?
No. The Royals have a tough go of it with Gerrit Cole tonight. And if he can do what he's done in the past in the postseason, then, yeah, you're spot on. But it's going to be if he can do that again. But it's going to be some good baseball tonight either way.
Absolutely going to be some great baseball. Where can folks go to get more of you, your Phillies coverage, and your baseball content in general?
Yeah, you can follow me personally on Twitter at Troy B Baseball, and then you can find the podcast, The Philly Faithful Podcast, on Spotify, iTunes, YouTube, and then you can follow that on Twitter at Philly Faith Pod, and faith is spelled with a PH, just like Philly.
You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. You can follow the show on Twitter, First Pitch, IBPN. And then obviously, if you're listening on audio, do us a favor, leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, hit the notification bell so you know when we drop a new episode. And either way, tell your friends to go out and listen to the First Pitch podcast to find out what they missed in baseball the day before. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.